Now, the heart disease claims approximately 80,000 lives per year and accounts for close to 40% of all deaths in Canada. Of those killed by coronary disease, and this may be a surprise to you, approximately 50% have low or normal cholesterol levels. In addition, about 85% of people who have a high cholesterol will not develop coronary heart disease at all during their lifetime. Now, day and night, the muscles of your heart contract and relax to pump blood throughout your body. When blood returns to the heart, it follows a complicated pathway. The oxygen-poor blood, which is shown in blue in a diagram that should be coming up, flows from the body into the right atrium or the right part of the heart, the upper right chamber. And from there, it goes down below, and here's our picture. You can see the heart pumping away now. Here it is coming in inferior vena cava into the lower chamber, up through the lungs, coming back from the lungs into the left ventricle, and then being pumped out to the body. Amazing piece of flexibility and of mechanism. Early physiologists noted that heart muscles contracted if calcium was injected into the muscle fibers. They noted, too, that to keep an isolated heart beating, the heart had to have calcium in the perfusion liquid. Well, what's the point? Well, the point is that calcium's necessary for heart muscle contraction. But calcium is not enough by itself. For the heart to utilize calcium, calmodulin is required. No calmodulin, no contractions. Well, where on earth would you get calmodulin? Well, you'll notice that we've got on the screen here, it's high in ordinary garden peas. And even if calcium is in the diet and its absorption is okay, in the absence of calmodulin, you would not have a good contraction. Now, potassium.
Last word was?
Potassium.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
If it's possible, when you're reading something from here, if it's something a little bit larger, then if you turn to the screen and then look here, so it looks otherwise, because what Gerald told me mainly to focus on this particular time is the screen. So I'm focusing a lot on the screen, but I am going back to you when you're saying something like garden peas or blah, blah.
Right, yeah.
If when that happens, if once in a while you could just look at the screen, and then I can kind of get you at the same time.
Okay.
Otherwise, you're just looking down at this all the time.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Which is...
Yeah. Which is good, because I like being able to see it down here. Yeah. Because then I'm not always like this. Okay.
Maybe just start with potassium again.
Okay.
Okay.
Now, potassium is one of the minerals, an enzyme activator actually, is mostly in cells. And if extracellular potassium becomes low, that means the potassium outside of the cells, it will cause depolarization of muscle cell membranes. This makes heart muscle cells twitchy or excitable, and therefore irregular, tending to an irregular heartbeat. So we must have an adequate potassium outside of cells for cardiac stability. Everyone with much decrease of potassium will show damage and degeneration of muscle tissue. And you know, today's society, we have so much salt in the diet, and salt acts to replace potassium in our diet nowadays. Now, the interesting thing is that if you are low in potassium, then the damage and degeneration of the muscle of the heart that is manifest is found to be similar to heart attack victims when they analyze their hearts at autopsy. Hanselier, who disappeared suddenly off our screen, showed that pretreatment with potassium allowed survival in animals subjected to the same stress that killed by heart attack those not pretreated with the potassium. Now, I don't like the experiments that this man did with the animals. There's a scripture that says, the righteous man regards the life of the beast, but the tender mercies of the wicked are cruel, and you can take that for what it says. Premature ventricular contractions, or PVCs, are associated with low potassium. Much increased sodium leads to decreased potassium. Again, as we mentioned, very important to know that if you're converting your meal with a so it looks like a snowstorm, then you're really increasing your sodium and you're going to decrease your potassium and you're going to be at risk for premature ventricular contractions. One of the highest sources of potassium is kelp, some 5.5 times higher than another high source, which is raw sunflower seeds, which is about one of the easiest ones you can get a hold of, but kelp is good. Now, I must mention here too, recent studies on kelp show that the kelp is just loaded with heavy metals. And because of that, there is very few sources that of kelp that you can get on the market today that do not have a heavy metal content and therefore depress the enzymes necessary for all of our functions in the body. There are some, and I'll just mention one of them at the moment, and it's Nature's Sunshine, and that can be a reliable one. The next high potassium levels relative to sunflower seeds are wheat germ, baked potatoes, almonds, parsley, and Brazil nuts. Okay, wheat germ being a very important one. Rogers wheat germ, I know, is available at Safeways. They're doing it right there because they know that if they do it wrong, they lose a lot of business. And I'm talking about Rogers, not Safeways. All right. Some early symptoms of low potassium are general weakness. That's one of the first ones, but that applies to a lot of other things as well. Impairment of neuromuscular function, so that your coordination tends to drop a bit, poor reflexes, and soft sagging muscles. Well, that seems to apply to an awful lot of people in my age group, but it's something to keep in mind when it occurs in younger people. The later signs, of course, include insomnia, constipation, and slow, irregular heartbeat. And this is a big one here, slow, irregular heartbeat. And note that processed foods have a very high sodium to potassium ratio, and potassium is found frequently low in angina cases. Angina being this heart pain that you see depicted in movies where they clutch their heart and they're having severe angina, and if they don't get their nitroglycerin in their mouth, then they're goners, at least on the screen. Probably the commonest cause for irregular heart rate, now that we've been speaking of it, is caffeine, and especially coffee. The speaker can drink 1/2 cup of coffee, and for the next 2 days, he will have a very irregular heart rate. So I stay away from it. Now, what's interesting about caffeine is that 6 or more cups will show a change in the ECG of a 250-pound athlete, even a football player that's running along all the time. So it's something to avoid if you have irregular heart rate. Now, low magnesium will also produce an irregular and a dangerous heart rhythm because magnesium is necessary to prevent calcium from getting into cells, which will throw the cell into spasm. Magnesium is nature's natural calcium blocker in allowing the body to put calcium in its proper place rather than inside a cell of an organ, which can bring spasm to that organ. Sudden death cases from coronaries frequently have both low magnesium and low potassium. Keep that one in mind, because it was telling us that if you, in fact, do not have a low magnesium or a low potassium, then there's going to be fewer of these things, namely the sudden death cases from heart attack. Note that low magnesium is associated with soft or distilled water, and that coronary death rate is increased where these kind of waters are consumed chronically. Now, to get around, a lot of people I know have distillers, and to get around the fact that the coronary death rate being increased is absolutely essential for them to take a good broad spectrum organically based food supplement to get their minerals. Low magnesium also leads to coronary spasm, as we just indicated before. And this mineral, namely magnesium, frequently is low in diabetics. And the diabetic has much higher incidence of coronaries and deaths as a result of them. And they have an increased rate, incidentally as well, of atherosclerosis, which we'll talk about a little later. Low magnesium is also associated with an increase in total blood fats. And so a low magnesium is bad for more than one reason. Recalling that low magnesium is associated with dysrhythmia as well, which means an irregular heart rate. Patients with atrial fibrillation, low in magnesium, require double the amount of digoxin for control. And there's your reference there. So what's interesting here is that if some people that are on digoxin for control of atrial fib, and they find they have to double it, and that's the usual thing that the standard medical people will do, and so that the cardiologists do. Whereas if you increase their magnesium, then you discover that you don't have to double the amount of digoxin, because digoxin on a long-term basis will eventually harm kidneys. I think what's interesting here too is that the magnesium, if you have any tendency toward constipation at all, then magnesium tends to solve that. I put people on CalMag at 3 per day if they have no problem whatsoever with constipation. But even if they have intermittent constipation, they instantly go on 4 CalMags a day, and that solves the problem. Taurine is an amino acid, most of which is found in heart muscle. It was originally extracted from bull's hearts, and so they called it Taurus the bull, and so they called it taurine. And it's rather interesting. It's still in beef heart, and because it tends to collect in the heart. It's also in the eyes, and is a wonderful thing for solving certain eye problems. And its precursors are sulfur-containing amino acids in beans, peas, and lentils, methionine in fish, beef and soybean. Now, it's necessary to have the precursors. And you notice that a lot of people don't eat beans or peas or lentils. And many of the same people don't like fish, but they have beef, but they don't eat soybean. So they're limiting themselves here. And there are some factors associated with that, particularly in cancer cases, that we would be a little leery of. But taurine is available as an amino acid, but it must be taken on an irregular basis. It prevents, the reason for that is the body will then just say, oh, you're just giving me beef heart, and it won't affect the beat. But in cases of irregular heartbeat, taurine is good. And we give it on a basis of, two a day for 3 days, the maximum of 3 a day, depending on the weight of the patient, but maybe for 2 days, and then we'd drop it down to 2, and then we go a day off with none, and then we get back. to maybe one, and then off, and then two a day, and then three a day, and so on. It must be taken on an irregular basis if you want to have the continued use. However, in my patients, I've noticed that after we have done this for 2 or 3 months, the heart will often start beating regularly, and I have a number of patients where now it's 5 years and they still haven't got into irregular heart rate, possibly because we pushed the precursors such as the beans, peas, and lentils, and so on. It prevents the loss of cell potassium, which we also already pointed out was so important for a good heartbeat, and therefore tends to prevent fibrillation and this premature ventricular contractions we were talking about. These are the bad ones. We don't like those because they're often associated with sudden death. Taurine also protects the heart from calcium overload. Remember, if the calcium gets into the cells, it can produce spasm. And it's important because if taurine's low, then it can be associated with an increased calcification of a heart valve. And that you don't want either, because once they're calcified, they lose their flexibility, they cannot close properly, and as a result of that, of course, then you start getting leakage and you get dissipation of pressures that are not regular, and you run into all sorts of problems. One of them is that when you produce the eddies from the leakies, is that you can get valves covered with bacteria, and this can be a real bad thing, and we kind of look for, that's when the doctor looks at your nails, and it looks as if you had splinters stuffed under your fingernails, and that's a sign that you have these bacterial loads in your heart valves, and it's dangerous. It also results in a smaller caliber of blood vessels, therefore less blood supply, therefore less oxygen, and therefore the possibility of angina, or that heart pain.
Stop for a second.
Okay.
All right. It's going good. Almost 1/6, 20 minutes.
Oh, we got to be finished in 2 hours?
No, you've been 20 minutes already.
Yeah, but we've got to be, this has got to go, so I've got to maybe not add too much, just stick
right.
With this.
Yes.
Okay, all right, I'm adding too much.
This thing is just, no, it's going very good.
Oh,
it's good.
It?
I was just letting you know that it's been,
yeah,
time
okay.
Goes, huh?
Yeah, it does.
This is just being picky. It's still clicking. Mm. Is it possible to put it,
Oh, is that what you're hearing?
No, it's, whenever you move, I get this little.
Oh, well, that may be it then. What is it that's rattling?
No, it's actual static. I can hear it static.
No. You know what? Oh, it is.
No, it's static.
You know what this is? This has been clicking.
That would click, but it's static because I can hear the little hisses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, it's little hisses.
All right. I'll put this here. Just so that it can't get clacked.
Could it be slid back?
Yeah.
All I can say is don't move, but that doesn't
work. Yeah, that doesn't work. That doesn't work, yeah. Okay.
What about trying putting it maybe?
I don't know. That's where they usually put it. Put it in this pocket up here.
Maybe we can try. Yeah. Sorry to get you this.
Okay. So does it sound like it's going okay?
Oh yeah, it sounds very good.
Okay.
Yeah, very good. Not without looking like a.
Yeah, like a spaghetti factory here. Well, we can leave the aerial out.
Yeah, that can be out.
Okay.
But that's not too.
Yeah, that can go right underneath here in a way, yeah. And then this could.
That's not too noticeable. That's
naughty. Okay. Is that okay?
Now keep on talking and just maybe do a little bit of moving.
Okay, all right, I'm moving and talking. Number one, number two, is that better?
Sounds perfect.
It does? Okay. Now we've already noticed that magnesium acts as a calcium blocker, and it's nature's natural common calcium blocker. But the drug commonly used for decreasing calcium in the medical profession is a calcium blocker called nifedipine or Adalat. Side effects of this drug can include birth defects in reproductive women. That does not occur with magnesium. Great increase of heart rate, which can lead to increased angina. And here it's recognized that the cause is unknown. Heart failure from dilatation and therefore overloading the heart with too much blood, which you do not get with magnesium. You don't get the increased heart rate either. And excess vasodilatation can lead to nausea, vomiting, dizziness, collapse, etc. But in spite of these side effects, it has also saved some lives, and we don't know how many it has not saved. The natural cure, and I emphasis here is on the natural one, is magnesium. And it prevents excess calcium from going into the cells in the first place, and therefore you wouldn't need the drug. And it prevents the spasm and therefore is a vasodilator without the previously noted bad side effects. None of the aforementioned side effects have been noted in the use of nature's calcium blocker magnesium. And that should be remembered that you should always take it when you're taking calcium. A doctor in 1979 by the name of M.A. Hilton utilized taurine as follows. 12 patients with angina, with the deterioration of their ECGs, they were in bad cases, and low potassium, and this was in the journal Obesity, and it's indicated down here. What were the results when he put them on taurine? Number one, 10 out of 12 reported that their angina had decreased significantly. Number two, they had improvement even in their ECGs. And number three, they ended up with a normal serum potassium. So it looks as if taurine was really good. So the point is, in fact, that taurine works well and becomes more effective with the use of magnesium that protects the heart from calcium overload into the cells. So try magnesium and taurine first to avoid bad side effects. Where can we get it? Well, you can get it in supplements, and if worst comes to worst, you can always buy a beef heart and bake it. Okay? Does anything lead to taurine loss? Yes. Myocardial ischemia, particularly in what we call the subendocardial regions, that means under the endocardium or that little thin plastic over the top, but that's in those areas where the impulse conduction system is, and that's the last place in the world you want to have the taurine loss because it's necessary for a good impulse. Now, here's one interesting little graph here. Tryptophan, which is high in fish, leads to a metabolism, or it has to be metabolized, rather, and when it's metabolized in the body, you end up with taurine. Also, the active B6 also aids in the metabolism of tryptophan here, giving you the taurine. And methionine from fish as well, and other sulfur amino acids such as beans, peas, and lentils again, also helps in the synthesis of taurine. But notice what happens when you are eating fried everything, or potato chips, or French fries. You inactivate the active B6, so this slows down the metabolism of tryptophan from the fish here. And instead then of your metabolism of tryptophan leading to taurine, which you need for good heart control and regular rate, then instead of that occurring, then what happens is you end up with xanthuronic acid, which is a waste commonly seen in heart patients because these heart patients are still eating potato chips, French fries, and fried everything. I always, at this stage, tell everybody, mail your frying pans to Dr. Taylor. There may be one or two he could use when he goes out camping. When heart valves are calcified or otherwise deformed, they produce eddies, and clots form easier. And unfortunately, the clot can be discharged and enter the brain to produce a stroke. This is a very topical subject for me, since our youngest son, in his 40s, suddenly, before going to sleep, suddenly found he was unable to speak whatsoever, and his face, side of his face had dropped. And when he was rushed to hospital, fortunately, his girlfriend phoned, and because he was going, and she says, I'll phone an ambulance. And she said, I don't know what to do. I'll drive you there. She said, well, at least I got to phone your father. And so he indicated, yes, she phoned, and I told them what to do, and it was included swallowing a lot of calcium magnesium tablets and vitamin C, drinking water to beat the band, and also swallowing a garlic licorice combination, since garlic decreases fibrinogen, and also swallowing some B vitamins, since the B vitamin complex will put a negative charge on the outside of red blood cells so that they repel one another so that they don't stick, and a few other things. And by the time he got to hospital, his stroke was virtually over. And however, further investigation indicated that he had a deformed heart valve which was forming eddies, clots, and the clot that he had was a big one, measuring something like 1.5 centimeters by 4 centimeters, hanging on the heart valve. But we've got rid of that for him nutritionally, and we're real happy about it. But he has to change his lifestyle, which he's done somewhat. Now, problem, calcification of arteries and heart valves. What can we do about that? Solution, number one, adequate calcium. Because if you're calcifying arteries, it's telling us one thing, and that is that your bloodstream is actually pulling calcium from your skeleton in an effort to make sure that you have enough in the blood. That's one of the reasons. We'll go into that a little later. So you do need adequate calcium so that your body doesn't have to be continuously pulling it out of the blood vessels, or out of the bones rather. And this is, of course, why you get these icicle things that are called bone spurs. It's people with bone spurs have a low calcium blood, and the body will maintain calcium. The other solution is vitamin D for calcium absorption. You must have the receptor sites in the intestine coated with vitamin D in order to absorb calcium. You do need magnesium again to keep calcium in its right place. You do not want it inside of cells where it can produce spasm. And then, of course, taurine, which will also is advantageous in a decrease, as we noted before, of calcification, particularly of heart valves. Correction of body acidity. This is absolutely essential, because if your body is acid, then what does the body do? It'll keep your blood level, pH, within the normal range so that you won't die. But you can have a total body acidity that really drops, and the body's working like mad. You put an extra load on the body with this acidity here. And what will do that? Well, red meat is one of the things. Eating everything cooked without enzymes. And there's an awful lot of factors. Eating raw vegetables will help to correct this. So does apples, lemons, and limes, and yams particularly will correct the body acidity, although they can't tell why that works so effective. Some exercise to increase the oxygen intake, because if oxygen is low, the pH drops, which is another way of saying the body becomes acidic. Intake of food, which when metabolized, alkalizes. And this even includes lemons and limes. It does not include oranges. Oranges, when they are metabolized, still maintain an acidic nature, whereas lemons and limes, when they're metabolized, actually alkalize the body. And there we go. And another one to remember that I didn't mention possibly was apples. And that's a very important one. Apples and applesauce will tend to raise the pH or correct body acidity. Seriously minimizing red meat and sweets, including chocolates. Sorry, folks, but that just happens to be the way it is if you want to have healthy blood vessels. Now, you also have to correct the inflammatory problems. And here is well known now, and when I say now, and it's only well known not among doctors particularly, but certainly among the PhD researchers all around the world, that a fish oil is anti-inflammatory, particularly what we call EPA or eicosapentaenoic acid. And the oil that I strongly recommend is one made by a company that has their plant right on the ship. And they catch the fish, the oil is extracted, and it's made into a capsule immediately. And if you want to know which one that is, simply contact the phone number that's on the tape that contains this subject matter. Utilizing ionized colloidal silver will fight circulatory infections. Colloidal silver has been used since 1898 and has a tremendous number of research projects confirming that it is one of the most effective antibiotics there is. I must mention, however, if you're making your own colloidal silver or you're purchasing colloidal silver, you absolutely must ensure that that is the best quality silver you can get. The best quality silver in the world is 99.999% pure, and it's the Canadian maple leaf silver, which you can buy at any coin shop in a block form. And in addition, you must use double distilled water. Now, the reason I'm saying this is that if you use any silver coin, it's got other heavy metals in it, or if you use non-double distilled water, you may get other minerals in that water. And colloidal silver with other minerals will make silver compounds, and they are carcinogenic. And again, you want to find out a company that's selling it. If you don't make your own that you can rely on, then refer to the tape. Phone number. Little strokes, or TIAs, which stands for transitory ischemic attacks, are seen now in 30-year-olds. I've had them. A Finnish study reported in Lancet the following information. Over 50% of strokes occurred on a weekend. And that's rather interesting. Why? Well, approximately 20% occurred less than 24 hours after a drinking spree. And that's when people usually drink, is on weekends. Approximately 4% occurred while a patient was still drunk. So apparently alcohol is not good for people with stroke susceptibility. When the rate of intoxication for men and women less than 40 years old was found, for men, intoxication preceded strokes by up to 20% more frequently than if they hadn't been drinking. For women, the intoxication preceded strokes by up to 300% more frequently, but therefore the female risk is greater than the male risk in terms of those that drink a lot of alcohol on weekends. Cerebrovascular disease correlates with the consumption of plant proteins as well, because they mimic estrogens, and they're called phytoestrogens, okay? And since soybean and peanuts are high in phytoestrogens, they must be limited where stroke is a danger. And I've told my son about this, and I've told my son about these. And these are the ones he has to watch because he loves them. Okay? In general, a low stroke incident is associated with a high consumption of fresh vegetables and fruit. And there's the reference for there, okay? So vegetarians have, as a result, a decreased incidence of strokes. They occur for four major reasons. One, small vessel atheroma. That means atherosclerotic or plaques, most in the older age group. And that gives you your transitory ischemic attacks, or the TIAs that you may have heard the doctor talking about. The other cause is a major thrombosis or a clot formation. In my son's case, he had a big major thrombosis and it flew from his heart up to his brain. Rupture of a vessel giving hemorrhage will also cause a stroke. That's if the vessel's ruptures in the head, and embolism or clots moving from elsewhere in the body. Clot, malignancy. You can get an air embolism from scuba diving if you're dumb enough to go down below, hold your breath, and come to the surface without turning your head up like this and allowing the pressure of the air inside to escape gradually out of your lungs through your open throat. Because if you don't lift your chin up, then your throat is kinked like a hose and it holds it in there. And I know of a young man that died that way because I was the president of the Alberta Underwater Swimming Club. Malignancy will also do it, as we've seen. What are the signs of a TIA? Well, temporary blindness of one eye, usually. That happened to my stepfather, and it lasted in there for a couple of days. B, tingling of the lips or tongue. Numbness of an arm, hand, or leg. And unusual headache. So those are the signs that maybe a stroke is about to come. And when you have those, I can only strongly advise that you get to a hospital immediately. Okay? Now, the onset is usually insidious, which is a word meaning silent, sneaky, and slight. Okay? With decreasing memory, sometimes preceding it, emotionally unstable behavior, as seen usually by the wife or the husband, or the daughters or the sons. Selfishness, although you don't have to have a stroke to be that way. Resistance to change, and you don't have to have a stroke to be that way either. Loss of self-control, and I must say you don't have to have a stroke to be like that either. We have a lot of patients that don't have strokes that would fit some of these characteristics. And sometimes epilepsy. And when an epileptic occurs in an adult, and without any history of it before, even if it's a minor seizure, again, get them to hospital fast. Okay? Occasionally Parkinson tremors. Okay? That's usually associated with a little bit of what they call finger rolling, where they move their fingers somewhat as if they were trying to roll a very small cigarette. And that's a warning. Patients having TIAs or transitory ischemic attacks may become much worse if given an anesthetic and they did not let your anesthetist know that I've been having a little bit of numb tingling in my lips, or every now and again. I had a past episode 2 months ago when I went temporarily blind. I kept blinking away and wondering why I wasn't seeing out of that eye. You must notify them, because if you have an anesthetic, you may have a complete stroke. Well, now here's an interesting little unit. Here's a stroke down here. All right, you'll notice that choline here and B12 help to decrease homocysteine, which is toxic to arteries. Homocysteine can lead to a stroke, so you want it decreased with the B12 and the choline. And where do you get choline and oxygen? Oxygen you get from a little bit of regular exercise, lecithin. But lecithin, remember, although it provides choline for you here, lecithin is also very high in phosphorus, and it requires calcium, magnesium to balance that. Now, homocysteine, of course, also is decreased if you take the active form of B6, which is called pyridoxal 5-phosphate, and that will move homocysteine so that you get methionine instead. Okay? And methionine is a precursor to cystathionine, which is non-toxic to the arteries, as contrast to homocysteine, which is very toxic. Folic acid also helps to move the homocysteine over to this methionine here and give the good stuff, which is non-toxic, and to cut this stuff down. But heat, estrogen, such as in birth control pills or Premarin, or sulfa drugs, will cut off the action of folic acid in bringing homocysteine down. Hot fats, well, let's go down here now. We've also noticed that thrombosis or clot will lead to stroke. Well, what can we do about that? Well, fish oil tends to bring it down, that EPA or chizopandenoic acid. So does vitamin B6 and selenium E. But that B6 and selenium E is blocked off by hot fats, alcohol, junk food, and estrogen again. So that'll block off the good effect of this in blocking off the thrombosis for the stroke. A bleed will also cause a stroke, but bioflavonoids used to be called vitamin P for permeability because it tend to tighten up the capillaries so you didn't bleed. And you can stop a bleed with bioflavonoids if it's a capillary bleed, and therefore bioflavonoids are good in preventing stroke. Then you can have vessel spasm, and that can produce a stroke just by cutting down the blood supply. Well, what helps there? Well, what blocks off the vessel spasm is ginkgo biloba, omega-6, which is from evening primrose, and magnesium again. So they will block off the tendency for vessel spasm to provide this. Now, of course, you can block off the alcohol by having your wife break the bottles or filling them up with something that isn't alcohol. Okay, interesting little graph on that alone. Now here's a picture showing clogged arteries. Atherosclerosis begins with injury of some kind to the lining of the artery, and a cell gets picked off and it's whipped down the artery. Now what will do that is chronic body acidity will do that when the pH is getting low, but the body's keeping it still within the normal range, but it's low normal. And I've seen these living pictures done by Spanish researchers that are really excellent. Blood lipids are thought to help to do that. Then, of course, when this wound is here, you'll notice that it looks like a ghost that comes along, and it's a clotting cell. It lands on top of the wound, spreads out its legs, it looks like an octopus suddenly, and then before you know it, you have fat will join in. And then another octopus will come along, it's a clotting cell, and you get this mixture of fat and clot, and then eventually you start seeing little layers of calcium get trapped in there, and then the muscle actually grows up like this, and it grows up and in because the muscle invades this area of inflammation, and so you start getting a real closure of this. Two types of blood cells, macrophages and platelets, result in plaque, and macrophages are, of course, the big eaters, and the platelets are your clotting cells, and the plaque, and that ends up with a narrowing of the artery. And in the previous pictures, it should be noted that blood fats stick to the plaque covered by platelets, etc., with calcium and fat and clotting cells plus scar tissue cells all mixed up. Have you ever wondered why there's cholesterol stuck to the inside of arteries and not on the inside of veins? Well, the reason is chronic inflammation of the arterial walls. And cholesterol comes in the arteries to soothe that inflammation because there's no muscle walls in veins. And I've been trying to teach this for a long time, and finally in the New England Journal of Medicine in January 1999, there was the article confirming what I was endeavoring to teach. From 60 to 75% of cholesterol is the bad type, the so-called bad, LDL, and about 20 to 25% is the good type, which we want to increase the heavy density lipoprotein, LDL, low density lipoprotein. The bad's only bad if it's too high or too plentiful. The good stuff, HDL function, is to remove excess cholesterol from tissues. Now, HDL2 is a lipid or a fat that's responsible for a decrease of an atherosclerotic risk, and so too is selenium E, in spite of all the recent research pointing out that that's not true. It is in fact true. Now here's a picture showing that it depends what kind of E you're investigating before you turn out these medical studies that they're turning out saying that vitamin E has no effect at all. Here's some work by Horowitz and his group in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, August 1984, and that's getting back, but even then he was the first one to show that there was a tremendous difference in our bloodstream depending on which type of vitamin E we took. Now, if you take 800 international units of vitamin E of the usual standard, which is the DL, it's synthetic, and you have the DL tocopherol acetate and the succinate. Succinate's the powder, the acetate is the oil. Most of the synthetic vitamin E out there is derived from a product called terpol, the same stuff you get turpentine from, and I'm not certain that the creator had in mind us drinking paint thinners or swallowing paint thinners for health. It does help, there's no question about it. Here is the area here where they were given 800 international units of E, vitamin E here, of various types. Here is a synthetic, and you'll notice it did give you blood levels 8, 24, and 48 hours, like so. Then they took it from here, and this is a broad spectrum vitamin E, having the alpha tocopherol, beta tocopherol, gamma tocopherol, and so on down the line. And they got the blood levels went higher at the same dose of this stuff here. I always remember this one, DL, that's synthetic, and I just say dislousy. So I remember it that way. And so here now you've got the real broad spectrum stuff, and it goes up much higher for a blood level at the same dose, for 8 hours, 24 hours, and for 48 hours after that single dose. If you add pectin to this, now you'll notice that for the first 24 hours, that pectin is synergistic with that E. Now, it's been found that there's a far better synergism factor than pectin, which will really raise it way up. Now, this is a special broad-spectrum certified organic soil-based E. It's rather rare to find, but again, if you want to know where to find it, go to the phone number on this tape, and you will discover that this gives you the higher one, and this is just a bare E, but without the real synergistic factor, which is selenium methionine, taken from certified organically grown soils, and it puts it up here somewhere. Okay, so there is a difference between synthetic and natural source products. I have a hard time getting that one through. I disagreed with Linus Pauling on the basis of graphs like that. Well, problem with a low good cholesterol or heavy density solution, what's heavy density lipoprotein, what's the solution? Regular exercise. Horrors. And I underlined the word regular. It doesn't help to go out once a week, exercise, and then there, I've had it. Although it's a lot easier for some people. Lower fat intake. Don't use that bread as an edible plate to hold all that delicious fat, okay? Regular exercise, more horrors, okay? A little red wine, one small drink a day, will also help to boost it, but that's the big thing. Doctors are a little leery of telling people that because they overdo it. If a little is good, then of course the whole bottle is better, and that's not the case. Avoid sweets, particularly raisins and grapes, because they have a different kind of sugar in than any other fruit. And this sugar is in glucose, whereas the other fruit is fructose, which is taken up a lot slower. Increase your high complex carbohydrates. Get off of that white paste that some people call bread. Chromium, which you'll get from whole wheat bread, will also help. Correct copper deficiencies. And this is a little hard to do other than taking a copper supplement. And you can get a copper citrate. Again, just phone the tape, or you can find that in your health food store. Don't take too much, however, because it can be a danger where cancer is concerned. Take carnitine. This is an amino acid that is essential for people with heart problems, particularly if you have congestive heart failure, and that's available in a health food store. And you cannot take it when you're eating other fish or other factors. Increase fish oil, and particularly, again, this one is the EPA. It is DHA that is good for increasing your mental ability and memories. Now, if vegetable oils high in the so-called polyunsaturated fatty acids are at only 10% of your caloric intake, and remember that fats are pretty high in calories, it leads to early aging, especially of facial skin. Now, I'm an incurable romantic, and I like to see you ladies looking as young as possible for as long as possible. But early aging will do that. The other thing that will speed up the aging of your skin is sucking fire nipples. I always say to my patients that, among other things with us young people, kisses should be delicious and not taste like old butts. Okay? So if you want to have early aging, be sure you're eating a lot of vegetable oils and smoke at least one cigarette a day, and you'll get wrinkling and so on. And the wrinkling may not show for a while, but once it starts, when you're maybe in your 50s, then you'll suddenly appear 10 years to 15 years. I've seen them 20 years. It looks like older than their stated age. Now, that's a bunny trail, and the reason I give bunny trails is because when I was a little tot, my name is Carlton Taylor, and they used to say, "How old are you, or what's your little name, little fella?" And I would look up, and the best I could do was cotton tail. And of course, I got cotton tail, so I've hung on to that over the years, and I have a habit of putting in bunny trails in my talks. So it goes along with cotton tail. Now, another problem, increased total cholesterol. What's the solution here? First of all, lower your fat foods. Less meat, more raw veg. Do not use bread as the edible plate to hold all that nice fat. Vitamin B3 in the form of niacetol will prevent flushing, and you don't have to take as much of it. The standard form of B3 may come in 100 milligrams, but taken by itself, it will sometimes lower blood pressure, and we do get the odd person will feel fainty or literally collapse on a driveway and have to stay there for half hour until they can get up without being too dizzy. So to get around that, we use niacetol and with niacin at 500 milligrams and with inositol added to it, which helps to prevent the flushing. I might note here that they're really excited at the Benjamin Institute in the States on niacin because it's been found to really help in the prevention of metastases to bones or in the treatment of people that have cancer of the bone. Chromium, which you get from whole wheat bread for the glucose tolerance factor chromium. There you can get chromium two ways, but the one you want is this one. This is the only one that's effective for bringing down total cholesterol and also for handling blood sugars. You can also get this as a supplement, and again, from the phone number on the tape. Psyllium, 3 teaspoons a day, works beautifully for bringing down total cholesterol because it provides a high fiber, and it is the most amazing stuff if you get the right form of it from the right company, then it works beautifully, not only to help to solve constipation, but also to help to solve diarrhea. It'll even gel a glass of water, so women really have found it highly effective for making jellies. They just have to put a teaspoon in and you got gel. Low alcohol, okay? Frequent small meals. Okay, yes. Okay. So how's it going?
Oh, good.
Good. Well, hopefully it'll be heard, eh? Okay. Do you want me to go back? Okay. Okay, frequent small meals, very important, rather than some great big ones. Low sugar, again, limit your raisins and grapes. You'll notice that's coming up more than once. Ginkgo biloba also helps here. And you can get that. You must know what company you're getting these supplements from. And if you phone the phone number, you'll find out which ones are absolutely reliable. Garlic, remembering that for cancer, you need a special one that's a chiolic garlic. But standard garlic, you should be limiting to 1 clove a day because it's found if you take more than 1 clove of raw garlic a day, to some people, especially the light-weighted ones, you will start getting breakdown of red blood cell membranes that you don't want. Now, I and J, namely the ginkgo and the garlic, take 8 weeks plus to take an effect. So you don't take it for the first week and think, and that's 2 months. So you don't take it for that first week and think, hey, it didn't work, okay? Now, there's your references to all that kind of data, if you like it. And problem, chlorinated water, a very significant factor in contributing to atherosclerosis. And this is work done by Dr. Price and a few of his colleagues. Now, solution is non-chlorinated water.
Sorry, you're crinkling again.
Am I?
It was really good.
Okay.
Didn't hear a squirt out of it. It's
okay. Is the battery okay?
Yeah, battery should be
okay.
Good.
Okay, alright. You want me to start over again on that? Okay, so the solution, Okay, so the solution to the problem of chlorinated water is drinking non-chlorinated water. Again, if you phone the phone number, you will discover where you can get water that's bubbling right out of the mountain at Vail Mount, British Columbia, and it is never having any problems with bacteria. There's never been a single bacteria ever discovered in it, so it doesn't need to be chlorinated, and it is good water. It also way cuts down the fluoride. They have measured it as high as 1/100th of a part per million, which is so low, and besides, it's not sodium aluminum fluoride that the standard municipalities use, and it is so low that you'd have to drink at least 100 times as much water, which would be a bathtub full every day in order to get into any problems whatsoever. It is wonderful tasting water. Now, let me tell you about this story. A doctor had a friend who was a dairy farmer, and dairy farmers, depending on what flushing solution they use, will sometimes end up with what we call milk stone, and it's a hardening in the pipes, particularly on the rubber portions and so on, and they can't scrape it off, so they have to replace their piping. The doctor was helping his dairy friend taking the piping apart when the dairy man commented, "I sure hope I'm not drinking something that's making my pipes clogged up like this." And the light came on in Dr. Price's mind. So what he did, knowing that roosters, not hens, but roosters aortas, will show atherosclerosis much the same as in a human blood vessel or human artery, he got 200 roosters. He divided them up. They had the identical food, free. They could eat as much as they liked when they wanted. And they had water, which was identical, but one of them had the water that was chlorinated at the same level by the same chlorine that the municipality was using. So the only difference they had was that one half of them were drinking chlorinated water. Well, nothing showed at all for the first while, but once they got into the third month, they noticed that the combs on the, that's the top part on the top of the rooster's head, were getting pink and floppy on the side where they had the chlorinated water. After 3.5 weeks, the ones that were drinking the chlorinated water started to stay close to the fence all the time and only moving away when they were hungry or thirsty. In addition, they looked like they had been dipped into a bucket of water and blow-dried from behind. They were very irregular-looking chickens. Then they started to die off. When they did autopsies on them, they would kill one of the good ones, whose combs were brilliant red still up, and they compared them. They noticed that the ones on the chlorinated water had atherosclerotic atherosclerosis in the aorta and also hemorrhaging into the lungs. Well, this was rather intriguing, so they kept on and they did autopsies. When 75% of the animals on the chlorinated water were dead, they then decided to sacrifice the other 25%, and they sacrificed all the others as well, and they noted that just in the chlorinated water ones, they had the atherosclerosis. Well, this was quite a find, and Dr. Price was thrilled. He went to have it published, and no one would publish it. Their retort was always, "Well, it hasn't been confirmed. It sounds too radical."
Just think of the word first.
Yeah. Radical is a good word.
Controversial? No. A conspiracy theory? No. Too outlandish?
That's the word.
Okay, that's right.
Okay.
Is that ever where you're standing
at? Yeah. Yeah, that's it. Outlandish to be true. So what he did was he got a couple of other doctors who had land, and they bought 200 roosters, and they did exactly the same experiments and got exactly the same results. Now, of course, he had three studies, and all of them identical. So he was very tickled with this, but still no one would publish it. He eventually wrote a book which is out of print, and I was very fortunate to get a hold of one of these. And when I read it over, it's rather interesting because he shows there that nowadays in the wilderness, if the rangers find a dead animal, they part of their project and their business is to do a biopsy. And when they do a biopsy, they look at the heart and they find hardening of the arteries and so on. You never find that in an animal in the wilderness, the hardening of the arteries. You do it only in animals that are raised in captivity where there is the chlorinated water. He pointed out well that in Yugoslavia, where the people are living and eating pig, and they eat the whole pig, all the fat, the big treat being the brown bread, just soaked in an inch of boiling fat in the frying pan. That's their big treat. They eat it, and they don't have hardening of the artery problems on that until they move into the cities from the foothills, and where they run into the atherosclerotic problems. I have some friends of mine that are from Yugoslavia, and they have confirmed that and said, oh yes, we had a number of relatives living in the hills, and that's something we always noted, and we weren't sure. We thought maybe it was the lack of exercise, which may have helped to contribute to that as well. So chlorinated water is a bad thing for bringing about atherosclerosis. Problem, increased low-density lipoprotein. That's the bad stuff, so-called. What's the solution here? Oatmeal daily. It's effective usually in about 10 days. Now, oatmeal only works if your LDL is increased. There's some studies pointing out that it doesn't work. But when you look at the studies, you find out that it was done on university students who were active and young, and who had a normal LDL in the first place. And so all they learned was that you don't lower a normal LDL by putting people on oatmeal daily. But it does work for people who have a high LDL. And it's effective usually in approximately 10 days. Oat bran also greatly increases bile excretion by 54%. Therefore, using up stored cholesterol. Because in order to make bile acid, then you absolutely need a source of cholesterol. So if you're increasing your bile acid, because cholesterol is only one of the things that's necessary to produce bile, then it uses it up. Now, the other things that's necessary to make bile are the active form of B6, pyridoxal 5-phosphate, and your fat-soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K. Well, what else can we do? It usually requires one large bowl of the cereal and four muffins a day when it comes to the oat bran. Pinto and navy beans leads to rapid decrease of LDL. And those are good if you can take the gas. But there's a Yugoslavian trick that you can do to decrease the gas when you're eating beans, and that is to add about 10 juniper berries to your pot when those beans are cooking. Activated charcoal for rapid decrease of LDL if you want an extremely rapid decrease. However, you've got to remember that activated charcoal will not only decrease LDL, but it'll pull out bad minerals and it'll pull out good minerals from your body. So you want to be sure you're putting in good ones. A half a tablespoon a day for 4 weeks has lowered LDL by 41%. Charcoal particles attract other substances as well as fat globules, gas bubbles, and is therefore used to decrease flatulence. And speaking of that subject, the average adult has 14 episodes a day, and he seems to be quite pleased with that idea. Well, continuing, mineral supplements necessary when on charcoal, as the latter pills pulls the minerals out, as we've noted before. Much lower sweets is necessary. Okay? You know, we have an awful lot of sugar around. Even ketchup is almost 30% sugar. Stop coffee, tea, chocolate, Coke. Increase your fish intake. Avoid hydrogenated vegetable oils. High fiber intake. And there's all your references. Okay? For everything I've said there. Now, there is a picture of a partially blocked artery. Look at here. You can see all of this clot formation here and here, here. And you've still got a few little openings, the two little wee dinky openings where this whole thing, this is the outer lining of this blood vessel way out here. And you can see there's hardly any blood getting through here at all. Obviously, with an artery this big, that is an autopsy specimen. Now, remember our homocysteine that leads to hardening of the arteries? Remember here that methionine from fish tends to block off that effect here, and that P5P, that's the active form of vitamin B6, helps in methionine here, and B12 and folic acid are necessary as well. So is an enzyme, and hot fats block off this P5P, active form of B6. They really do it. That's your French fries and potato chips again. And what blocks off the enzyme is your fluoridated water, fluoridated toothpaste, and too high a salt intake. Okay. Now, increased oxygen, hot foods, egg yolk powder, powdered milk, fried foods lead to oxysterols. B6, well, this is much the same as we had before. B6 moves homocysteine to methionine, which you can get from red meat, fish, and dairy products. Here you get oxysterols, homocysteine leads to those, that leads to atheromata or the plaque, and you get coronary vascular disease and stroke. But here's the big thing I wanted to get you to. Here's again, you see that methionine, folic acid, B2, B12, moves homocysteine this way. B6 moves homocysteine this way to the methionine. It also leads to cystathionine. Remember, it's the non-toxic one. And you cut out this part of the line that leads to CD and stroke. My key point is that you need folic acid, B12, B2, and the active form of B6 to prevent cardiovascular and stroke. Now, problem? Vasospasm when increased blood pressure. Here's a blood vessel. Now it's gone into spasm. Tends to occur in the younger adult and those with high blood pressure. Reason in the younger adult is because if this was all calcified, it won't contract that well. And it's often calcified in the older person. The body's arteries, oh, wait a minute, I'm going backwards. Yeah, that's all right. So, the body's pipes are not rigid, and that's the big key here. When we eat, for example, more blood goes to the digestive area. Since we don't have a water storage area for that, the rest of the blood, other vessels must constrict to get that in the stomach area. This caliber variation is under a complex neurochemical and physiological control. That is a big key when it comes to blood pressure. The body has priorities for that kind of control, and the number one priority is the brain. Next priority, lung, kidney, liver, and glands. And the final priority, bones, muscles, and skin. Now, what is interesting is that we only have a few areas where we can change the caliber safely. When the brain, which is a top priority, senses body dehydration, a message is sent to muscle blood vessels, the low priority ones. Contract. I need water up here. So what happens? Those blood vessels contract. How does the body tell the arteries to contract and hold on to water? It does this by a mechanism that promotes a compound called angiotensin. That's blood vessel tension. Increase the tension or increase the pressure in the blood vessel. That's the mechanism it does it by. The body also is told, hang on to your salt. Why? Because if you notice here, salt has a positive charge. Here's O2, here's hydrogen, here's my oxygen, and it's got two negative charges here, two positives out here. So it turns around quick because positive and negative attract one another. And bingo, now wherever sodium goes, water is going to follow. This H2O here is going to follow it. And so it tells the body, hang on to your salt, because if you hang on to the sodium in the salt, you're going to hang on to your water, because the brain has said, I need water. So when the brain needs water, the message is sent to the arteries, contract, and force more to go to the brain. When the doctor now does your blood pressure, he finds it's elevated because the blood vessels have contracted, of course. So what does the doctor do? He or she gives you a diuretic or a water pill, as indicated, for removing the water and salt from the imagined rigid pipes. Because everybody remembers that if you pull the volume down in a rigid pipe, the pressure's got to go down as well. The thing is this, the pipes are not rigid. So incidentally, when any person is chronically dehydrated, they're producing much more histamine. This is just another little bunny trail here. And what's histamine for? Well, increased histamine leads to susceptibility to allergies. So that's one of the factors in allergies. So you can't smell the roses safely without getting all stuffed up. So the first treatment for high blood pressure, because of what we have just said, is water, and not a decrease of your salt load. Now, some are salt sensitive, hypertensive. If they take their salt, their blood pressure goes way up. This means that their pressure will rise with salt intake if they're salt sensitive. What's the solution here? This is CalMag is the absolute solution, and this is work done, and here's the research done at the University in Knoxville, Tennessee, or wherever Knoxville is. It is Tennessee, I think. February 2002. Fairly recent, I would say. So the solution is CalMag if a person is found salt sensitive. So grandpa or your dad or mom, they take salt and up goes their blood pressure. This is an indicator that they are low in their calcium magnesium. Because when you put them on calcium magnesium, guess what? They lose their salt sensitivity. So the solution is a careful water intake, because if they have congestive heart failure, you have to be sure you don't overload the ticker. Prostaglandin E1 from evening primrose or other sources. Decrease of the prostaglandin E2 precursors, which we'll talk about. They happen to be hot fats. Avoid dairy products. No red meat, sorry. No organ meats. No crustaceans. That's, of course, crab, lobster, shrimp, and so on. Niacetol. Avoid high vitamin D to prevent calcium entry into cells and therefore spasm, because if you get too much vitamin D, and someone says, well, what's too much? Well, It's beyond what your intestines need for absorbing calcium. And most of all, in our winter time, we don't have to worry about getting too much vitamin D because it's normally made on our skin from sunshine on there. But I would say too much would be a 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 more halibut liver oil capsules a day, which have 400 units per capsule. Now, here's another thing. Red meat, we mentioned. Look at this. This was vegetarians here. And they're going along with a mean systolic blood pressure. That's the one at the high of the two blood pressures numbers that you hear about. That's the top one. Here they are eating their vegetarian or a vegetarian diet. Suddenly you put them on meat. Up goes their blood pressure. Stays up here. Then you take them off of red meat and down it goes again. Vegetarians were placed on beef for about 4 weeks and it raised their blood pressure. Then they resumed their original diet and their blood pressures dropped. And there's the references back there. Okay? Now, here's what the standard doctors will do when you have high blood pressure. Instead of going through the list that I've done, which gives tremendous success, they'll put you on phenobarbital, meprobamate, because it'll attract the cerebral cortex. Raw wolfia, hydralazine, and iproniazid, because it'll affect the hypothalamus here. Raw wolfia, veratrum, and hydralazine for the vasomotor center. And all of the rest all the way down here to attack the automatic ganglion in the nerves, to get the pressor amines affecting in the blood vessels, to affect the kidneys, and so on. A whole bunch of drugs, all of which have some real bad side effects. So that's what you get in place of what I just finished saying in terms of the nutritional approach. Now, here's another problem. This is what they call RULO, where the red blood cells, which this is a schematic representation of, are sticking together. And it's a sticking together of those red blood cells. And what's the solution to that? Well, as we mentioned before, proper water intake is one of them. The next one is niacin, which is the vitamin B3. It puts a negative charge on the cells, but you never take any B all by itself because they're synergistic. So you want niacin plus a B complex. And the good one I like is niacetol. B complex for niacin synergism, as we just finished mentioning. Okay. Now, another problem, platelet aggregation or clotting cells. This is good when you have the clotting cells separated, but when they start forming clumps like this, that's bad. So what's the solution here? The solutions are fish oils. They work on the membranes of the cells, okay? Evening primrose oil that we've mentioned before. It works well to prevent them from sticking together. Vitamin C, it's only partly effective, but it's better than having them all stuck together, so you don't want your clotting cells to form clots. So vitamin C helps to prevent it, but only somewhat. Fermented garlic is effective, and we mentioned kyolic, K-Y-O-L-I-C is a brand that you can get in health food stores for that. Active B6, that's the pyridoxal 5-phosphate, but that is not effective if aggregation is caused by epinephrine or arachidonic acid. And this stuff is caused by red meat, dairy products, fried hot fats, particularly like French fries and potato chips and so on. And of course, your crustaceans. Those are the precursors to this stuff. And if you have clotting as a result of this, then active B6 does not affect it. Now, here's another problem, fibrinogen. That comes from a word fibrin, meaning a fiber, and gen to generate fiber. Normally in our bloodstream, we have a dissolved fiber that's floating around. Very interesting science behind it. And so you have the little bits of fiber here. As we get older, you tend to get a bigger concentration of it. And here you can see the concentration is giving you a warning, we're about to clot here. What you want to do is go from here to here back to where you were when you were younger. Well, what's the way of doing that? Because this tends to occur as you get older. What's the way of doing that? Well, the first one, garlic is the most effective by far of decreasing fibrinogen levels. Second, magnesium. Third, vitamin C, and it's more effective for doing this than it was from the preventing the clots from clotting cells, and adequate water. Incidentally, the correct amount of water is your weight in pounds divided by 2. The boys did the research on that and found it's on a bell-shaped curve, and you want to be right at the top of the curve for maximum efficiency. And they found that it was your weight in weight in pounds divided by 2, and that's the ounces of good non-fluoridated water you should be drinking every 24 hours. More if you're sweating, but not less. And if you have congestive heart failure, you have to work into that gradually. Now we're going to talk about angiograms and bypass. Angiograms are used as a basis for indicating bypass surgery. Twice as many bypasses in Winnipeg are done than in Brandon, Ontario, but the same death rate after surgery in both cities. So apparently, doubling the bypasses did not have the death rate. So you might as well had half your bypass instead of the whole one. That is almost a thought. Now, Canadians get 5 times as many bypasses per capita versus Americans. But the Americans do 10 times those done in England, which means it sounds to me like Canadians would get 50 times as many bypasses as they do in England. That's surveys done by McMurdy. In the U.S., cardiovascular death rate is 77% higher in males than in females. So men receive more angioplasties, and angioplasties cardiologists in the U.S. can make $2,000 an hour. How would you like that? I wouldn't mind that. That's almost getting close to what our politicians are making in Ottawa. Compare this to what he or she would get for adjusting exercise, lifestyle change, and dietary programs, etc., and where all of the above get better results, as we will show. A 10-year, $24 million U.S. study conducted by National Lung and Heart Institute screened 16,000 patients, all of them with unrelenting angina, who had, that's chest pain, who had bypasses at 11 leading medical centers, not just any old medical center. That's a tremendous study, $24 million bucks. What were the results? When compared to a matched group of patients not having a bypass, there was no death rate difference to those who did not have the surgery. In other words, they did not die at a higher rate than those who had the coronary bypass. I think that's really amazing. Why haven't we heard about that before? For over 30 years now, coronary angiograms have been the test relied on for the need of a bypass. The National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute conducted a 3-phase study. And look at this study. In phase 1, 3 arteriographers working independently, they didn't know one another, looked at films of 28 patients who had died within 40 days of having cardiac catheterization. That's where they put the catheter in the groin and run it up into the heart. When their readings were compared with post-mortem findings, now they had died, they just opened them up and they could see what had gone wrong in the vessels, the arteriographers were wrong, get this, more than 50% of the time. 82% of the so-called experts, and I hate to remind everybody that an expert, the X is a has-been, and the spurt is a drip under pressure, but 82% of the experts' estimations were significantly over or underestimated. Look at that number. It means that only 18%, less than 1 out of 5, got anywhere near close. And these experts were very experienced X-ray readers. They were not novices. They had been doing this for years. In phase 2, 30 films showing distinct pathology were sent to 3 first-rate centers to discover how often first, second, and third readings of each film would agree. In other words, these people didn't know they were reading the same film the second time or the third time, because they're reading so many films, and all they have to do is change the name on them or just send them with different code numbers. In 61% of the time, only 61% of the time, did two or more of the three readings reach the same conclusion. So that meant over one-third of the time, 39% of the time, they did not reach the same conclusion in even two of the three readings. Finally, in phase three, 3 months later, the same 30 films were given to the same radiologists who were totally unaware that they had previously read the films at all. What were the results? This time, 32% of the second evaluations differed from the first readings. Now, are you getting an impression that maybe when the doctor sits and says, "Mr. Johnson, we've just got your angiogram back, and unless you get a bypass, you're going to die"? Many of my patients have been told this on the basis of one reading. The cardiology chief at St. Luke's Medical Center, New York, stated, "We had some of the best people reading the best quality angiograms available." Now, this man, the cardiology chief at St. Luke's, is not a fly-by-night surgeon or cardiologist. And he said, "We had some of the best," but he was really shaken up by the results. So in spite of these and similar studies, angiograms remain the major criterion for getting people, "Oh, I'm sorry, you have to have a bypass." So you make yourself a target if you listen to that, and I put a big question mark over top of that target. And boy, that no wonder that poor guy's sweating if he knew the data we just finished giving you. Many people require a second bypass, since the research indicates that bypass vessels close in 40% of the people within 10 years of their initial surgery. The remaining 60% have developed further artery narrowing. So that's virtually covering the lot. What's the solution? To prevent this, fish oil, such as you find in Flex, EPA, that's one brand of Flex, is the good one that's made by the ships, or when the fish are caught, they have their plant right on board, and they do it right in the ocean in the North Atlantic. And to prevent this, fish oil has been found effective, and that's your omega-3 fats. Depending on location and the experience of the surgeons, bypass is 1 to 4% fatal at surgery, and up to 5% of bypass operations precipitates a heart attack. Unfortunately, in 20% of cases, personality change results, 1 out of 5, which are sometimes permanent. It is not a simple thing. In another study involving 421 bypasses, 2% suffered central nervous system damage resulting in paralysis, inability to speak, or blindness. A larger percentage suffered confusion, memory loss, numbness, etc. Now, fortunately, most of these problems disappeared with time, but not all. And if you were the one that was blinded and it didn't disappear, then it's 100% for you. Now, okay. How are we coming? Ooh, I gotta leave. How far are we?
It's gotta be almost done. I remember this has gotta be just a few left here, let's
say. I don't think so. Yeah, what page are we on? You could wait a couple of minutes, but I don't want to be too late.
Okay, you're at 143.
Yeah, of how many?
Of
probably 200.
166.
Okay.
20 left.
20 left? Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go then. Let's go and see how we can do. Okay. So it's coming along not bad?
Coming along very
nice. Okay. Now, where do we go back now? This, I just hit the button again here?
No, just
leave it?
It didn't start from the beginning, did it?
Yeah, it looks like it. Yeah, it did. How do we get up to there?
Here, you open this, so I'll get it up to the beginning. Just give me one of those.
Okay.
What was it? We were 143, right?
I think you said that. Oh, I need a sharp knife to open these. You got a knife? No, I haven't got a sharp knife. We need to open this. We're coming, dear.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, we're coming. Well, we're working on it. We're working on it. Come on. There. Oops. We got that. Oh, you did. Thanks, sweetheart. Give us a kiss. There, that'll give me energy. Oh, yeah, that's it. That's where we were.
I know, but it's not. I want to resume the thing. Start
yeah.
Over again.
Yes. Okay, yeah.
Oh, you goofy thing.
Yeah, we might have to finish after Kathy gets here.
I win.
You win? Good. Okay.
So that's right where we left off, right?
All right. Let's yep, that's it. Page. Yep. Okay.
So where's that empty one? Right here?
Yes.
Good. Thank you.
Both of those are empty. Okay. Yeah, this works pretty good, doesn't it? Yeah, we need one of those machines. You see, we could do our talks this way, eh? Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Now for the nutritional treatment of angina. Remember that's that chest pain. In men with a waist girth in excess of 37.5 inches, the risk of coronary attack or heart attack is doubled. In women, a waist greater than 32 inches. And this applies in both when blood pressure is elevated. And that's important to notice the caveat there. Now, when we're thinking thin, I like this. He was thinking thin and he noticed that the part he only applied was his thinking. And apparently he didn't apply it to his eating, but so his head shrunk. I love that little thought there. Now, furthermore, for each pound of extra lard we have on us, there's 200 miles more blood vessels, which of course increases our blood pressure because these are small blood vessels and the heart has to squeeze all the harder to throw the blood through that extra 200 miles. Again, remember the blood pressure curve here for vegetarians? It went up. And we repeat that again because it's significant to indicate that maybe we shouldn't be eating too much beef on a regular basis. It's okay every now and again, but people eat it, want a steak every night. They're the ones that should really look at that one. So obviously one should lose weight. Dr. Fraser McGill University studied 220 heart attack cases, or myocardial infarcts is what the MI stand for, and noted that 6 to 8 months after the heart attack, depressed patients had 5 times the death rate. So you have to get rid of depression when you have heart problems. A merry heart does good like a medicine, and that's God's medicine. In the publication called Circulation, a study of 1,931 males chosen randomly, having no symptoms, and they're followed from 1984 to 1989, what did we find out? Those with a serum ferritin equal to or greater than 200 micrograms per liter had two times the risk of a heart attack, particularly when their bad cholesterol was elevated. So, low red meat intake is safer because that's where you could pick up a lot of extra serum ferritin or iron from the blood in the red meat. And of course, that's why it's red, because it's got a lot of blood in it. Smoking results in rapid contraction of the arteries in the heart. When you inhale once, whether you smoked for a minute or for 50 years, you inhale, your arteries will contract down. What happens then? You get less oxygen to the heart, therefore more angina, therefore more heart attacks. Again, fire nipples are not good for you. German research, quoted by Dr. Adele, noted that smog led to thicker blood, which in turn led to increased rate of heart attacks by people living in a smogged area. In a Finnish study, also quoted, 70% more heart attack cases proved positive for the bacteria chlamydia pneumonia in the blood. Remember, that's interesting. Of course, what's the solution here? Treated with garlic, echinacea. So you have to know what company you're dealing with. And then again, you can solve this problem with ionic colloidal silver, and there's only one commercial source that I would rely on. And of course, if you make your own, we told you how to do it before. Dr. Mueller of Harvard published a study noting that heart attacks are 3 times more likely to happen at 9 a.m. than at 11 p.m. So whatever you do, set your alarm at 8:55 a.m. so you can still have time enough to dial 911. And I believe it or not, some people took me seriously on that one. Therefore, drink a proper amount of water when going to bed. Do not go to bed dehydrated, even if you have to get up in the middle of the night. And recall that vitamin E with vitamin mineral supplements decreases coronary disease by Rimadyl, provided you, and especially I should say, if you're using a broad spectrum source of vitamin E and not the synthetic stuff. Gaze studies indicate that the levels of vitamin E, greater than the level of cholesterol, greater than genetic factors, greater than cholesterol plus genetic factors, greater than vitamin C, greater than vitamin E, relative to heart attack risk. But all of the above are beneficial in preventing a heart attack. That is, the real good vitamin E should be with selenium, lower cholesterol, healthy genetic factors, vitamin C, and vitamin A all help to prevent heart attacks. Now, double-blind study by Boyd in severe atherosclerosis using serial x-rays and selenium E showed that those on vasodilators, anticoagulants, or multivites without vitamin E had no beneficial effect. You absolutely must have that beneficial effect. Now, Sandoz did experiments confirming garlic's ability to reduce high blood pressure, which also reduces cholesterol, but it does so in time, not within the first 6 weeks, but after 6 weeks, and it prevents blood clots that can cause heart attacks as well. And one researcher stated that the herb garlic is at least as potent as aspirin for the prevention of heart attack regarding clotting. The commonest cause is a virus, and virus infection of the heart is the commonest precursor to a requirement for a heart transplant. So if ever you have a bad flu, please take your vitamin E and the other list and your A and so on, as we indicated before. Now here's a problem of congestive heart failure. What's the solution? Well, let's have a look. Garlic after meals, preferably fermented garlic, which would be Kyolic, K-Y-O-L-I-C, that's the name of the brand. Echinacea, providing it's the real stuff. Very low sweets. No raisins or grapes, because that has glucose in both of those rather than fructose as in other fruits, and therefore you get your sweets in your bloodstream very quickly. All fruit juices should be diluted 50-50 with water. Magnesium, which decreases calcium entry into cells, as we mentioned over and over again. Your omega-3 fish oils, especially the eicosapentaenoic acid. If you want to have smarter brains, then you go for the DHA. And selenium E. Now, there's a warning about selenium E, and that's it. That's this. If you have not been on selenium E, and you start taking it at 400 international units a day, you'll feel super. This is if you had congestive heart failure or high blood pressure. But if you had congestive heart failure, never been on it, you take it, you'd feel super for 10 days, but the chances of you dying greatly go up because you took too much. You must limit selenium E with congestive heart failure, no previous intake of selenium E. You must limit it to 150 international units a day only. The other thing is, one-third of people with selenium, taking selenium E, who have high blood pressure will have an increase of that blood pressure. One-third, there will be no change, and in one-third, it actually decreases. It's been my experience over years with people that people taking selenium E carefully, if they had high blood pressure, that we noticed the high blood pressure slowly comes down with the use of selenium E if you use it judicially. Now, as noted before, decreasing homocysteine and atheroma or atherosclerotic tendencies, and we've told you how to do that with folic acid, B12, and so on, and especially the active form of vitamin B6, pyridoxal 5-phosphate. Hawthorn, which increases cardiac tone. Ginseng, which increases the circulation, not only in the heart, but elsewhere in the body. And coenzyme Q10 and low salt are found to be highly effective for the treatment of congestive heart failure. They have over 10 million Japanese on this alone through doctor's prescriptions. And for heart failure, congestive heart failure, I strongly advise 120 milligrams a day. And you can regenerate heart muscle, believe it or not, and this has been found in Germany, with raw heart concentrate, which is available through a particular source. Also through trypsin, which is a pancreatic enzyme, available from the same source, and raw spleen concentrate, available from the same source, particularly since they do it, as we call, azeotrophically, meaning that they have used a solvent to take the fat out, and therefore the fat-soluble insecticides and herbicides are removed as well. We have now concluded this, and as I mentioned again, be assured that what we've told you works if you only remember that there are some things that you can do to take control of your own health and not leave it in the hands of others. Thank you very much.